This morning I want to continue with those matters that I introduced on Wednesday. Again, by way of reminder, these points come from a letter that Brother Roy Lanier Jr. wrote to William Woodson several years ago, as Brother Woodson at the time was the head of the Bible department at Freed Hardeman College in Henderson, Tennessee, and he was contemplating a course that he would have to teach to young preachers. And so he had asked Brother Lanier for some suggestions. Brother Lanier shared this letter with me several years ago, and I have often referred to it in my preaching life, and it has been helpful by way of reminder and also helpful by way of insight as I try to be as effective as I possibly can as a preacher of the gospel as well. And on Wednesday, we introduced 4 points, and I will remind you very quickly of what those points are. First one had to do with schedule, self-discipline. Second one had to do with personal example in the community, particularly in the business community, as you will rub shoulders with various businessmen in the places that you will be doing your work as a preacher. The third point had to do with getting along with people and developing those people skills that make you effective in ministry. And then the fourth point that was given on Wednesday had to do with working with elders, working with bishops, as it were. And so as we remind ourselves of the particulars involved in those 4 points, I want to push on to point number 5. And that is that what you need to recognize is that you need to have a teaching attitude. Young men tend to, as they listen to older preachers and they see how older preachers handle things and how positive and sometimes aggressive older preachers can be in certain matters, they're challenged by the temptation to do the same thing. And older preachers might actually be able to do some of those things and do them well because of the experience they have and the age that they convey, and to borrow from the King James Version, the old hoary head concept that you see in several places helps an older preacher to be able to perhaps be a little more pushy in some ways than a younger preacher really can. So you're going to have to resist that temptation to become perhaps too positive, too enthusiastic, and too pushy in certain areas. What I have noticed as I have taught the preacher in his work class here, and one of the assignments that I have given in the past when I taught that class had to do with setting up a year schedule of sermons. The tendency that always would come in this class for many of my students was to major in rebuke, to major in the idea of straightening out. Now, there is a time for rebuking. There's a time for reproof. There's a time for exhortation, and there's a time certainly for positive instruction. But young men tend to gravitate, it seems like, to me anyway, toward that which is negative, toward that which is a reprimand kind of circumstance. And while there will be those times, and while there certainly will be those times in which you will have to tell the brethren, the Lord expects this, and we're not doing it. And I'm calling on you, and I'm challenging you to repent and do better. Those times aren't week in and week out. There are those times in which you need to hearten people. There are those times in which you need to encourage people. And I would say those times are far and away more necessary than the other. You have got to seek the balance in order to be effective in this regard. Thus, you need to have this teaching attitude. A spirit of teaching, a spirit of instruction, a spirit of encouragement must be part and parcel of the way in which you approach your ministry. You must have the courage to offer rebuke when needed, but it seems to me that the best thing you can do is major in being an instructor, major in being a teacher. When I was a baseball coach, and the little boys that I coached were in the third grade, Every last one of them wanted to do well. And then a minute later, they were busy with other things. And I can remember, and I don't remember his name, sad to say, our right fielder. We would put him out in right field. He could hit the ball when he thought that's what he ought to do. We'd stick him out into right field, and we'd say, get ready, you know, keep your eye on the batter and all of that. And he'd say, hey, there's a butterfly. And he'd wander off and chase the butterfly. I was coaching first base one time, and a little boy who hadn't got a hit all season. I'd been working with him and trying to show him how to hit the ball, and he finally got a hit, and he got to first base. And I said, way to go. Now tie your shoe. And he looked up at me and looked down at his shoe, and then he just stood on the base, and I said, didn't you hear me? I said, tie your shoe. He looked up at me, looked down again, and stood on the base. And I said, young man, I need you to tie your shoe. He looked up at me and he said, coach, don't know how. Now here's the point. In church, you're going to run into several people who are going to be that way on a spiritual level of some kind. You're going to tell them to do something. You're going to expect that they can do that thing. You're going to expect, because of their age or their position in church or whatever the issue may be, that they ought to be doing it. And when they don't, you're going to look at them like I looked at this little boy, and you're going to, in essence, tell them to tie their shoe. And then finally, they're going to get around to confessing to you they don't know how. If you're an instructor, you're going to understand the need to show people the way. And that's different than sitting up here and constantly, or standing up in front of a crowd and constantly telling them what they're doing wrong. Oftentimes people know they're doing things wrong and they just need help in order to not do that. So be an instructor and encourage and hearten and all of those types of things that are optimistic and positive in that regard. You need to view yourself in that way. Your job is to take a church from where you find it to where it ought to be and where it is capable of being. And that takes time. Which leads me to point number 6, which is this matter of tolerance. How does a young preacher deal with a situation that is wrong, but one where the parties do not choose to change when that wrong is pointed out and mentioned? You know, when this occurs in a relationship to an elder, a deacon, or a teacher, it certainly becomes a source of major problems. And as young men, you need to recognize that demands for change will not always be the remedy to all problems. Now hear me clearly. In many things, there must be a spirit of tolerance and patience. And a hard, demanding, driving attitude does not always become, and I mean by that in terms of a good display, it does not always become a good servant of the Lord. In my preaching career, if we also count Bear Valley, my time here as part of that, I have preached for 38 years, and I have lived in 4 places. I have a friend who has preached in that same period of time who has been in about 11 places. I've never been fired. My friend has been fired 3-4 times that I know of. What's the difference? The difference, most certainly, is not that I'm Casper Milquetoast, as it were, and he is that hard-charging, stand-up-for-the-truth kind of a guy. The difference is tolerance. The difference is trying to understand where people are. The difference is recognizing the fact that you may not be able to accomplish with this church a particular thing this year, but if you accomplish it next year or the year after that, isn't it the case that you've accomplished it? Now, that's not compromise. That's tolerance. And that's understanding where people are. That is recognizing that you need to nudge them and move them and help them and show them, and things work out as they ought to work out. You see, tolerance will come from our understanding frailties. Tolerance will come from our understanding weaknesses. Tolerance will come from our standing the trials and the difficulties of others. I can't begin to tell you how many times that I've dealt with people and I've been irked when I have confronted them about this or that, and I bring them into the office or whatever the case may be over the course of my ministry, and I say, you know, this thing isn't going like we want it to. What's the problem? What's happening here? I'm sensing that you're not on board. And they'll burst into tears. There's something there that I don't know about, that I haven't seen, that a little bit of tolerance goes a long way in helping them overcome issues of sin, issues of misunderstanding, issues of immaturity, issues of simply just not knowing. So be tolerant. That brings me to point 7, which has to do with patience. You know, in spite of all that one might say on this subject of patience, young guys and older ones too from time to time, but young guys are still young, and they find it hard to be patient. And you will, and you do. And you see something, and you see that it needs to be done, and you think that it ought to be done right now and finished right now. And so with that, everybody ought to agree and go, and the thing is accomplished, and everybody is happy. And honestly, that's not really the way life is going to work. We need to recognize, if we're going to be patient, and we certainly need to, as the Bible in several places indicates that to us, God's man must be patient and forbearing with all, as Paul would tell Timothy. So we need to learn to take a longer look at certain issues. I'm not talking about doctrinal issues. I'm talking about issues of what the church can do and how quickly they might be able to accomplish something. But take a longer look, and perhaps even to getting things done, maybe not in the first year, maybe not in the second year, but maybe you have a 5-year plan or concept, or a 10-year plan or concept, all the while you're educating brethren into realizing what they actually can do. What I have discovered in a lot of churches with a lot of brethren is they simply don't have the confidence that they can do certain things, that they can accomplish great things for God. And rather than upbraid them relative to that, they need somebody to simply show them that, yeah, we can. Yeah, with God's help, we can. Several years ago when I lived in Montrose, we were planning an evangelistic campaign, and we had arranged with a large congregation somewhere for them to come and help us with this, and they were going to send 42 of their members to come and help us with this evangelistic campaign. And we were all so excited about this because we were just a small church of about 110 at the time. We were looking forward to the fellowship, forward to the expertise that this church could bring into this matter. We were looking forward to all the Bible studies that we might be able to set up and the baptisms that might occur and all of this sort of thing. And so we were getting ready for them to come, and they were to arrive either on Friday or Saturday, and we were going to start the first day of the campaign on Sunday and go for 4 or 5 days after that and knock every door in town and study with people like they had never seen in that church or in that town before. And I get a call on Wednesday night from one of the elders from this big church with all this expertise and all this desire to do this work over and over again as they had done in the past. And he said, "We're not coming." And I said, "Really?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "There have been some things come up and people have changed their mind and we're simply not coming. And we're sorry." Well, what do you do in a circumstance like that? Because I had to go and teach a Bible class that same Wednesday night, in about 10 minutes after that call was done. Just so happened that that particular night was our singing night, so everybody was in the auditorium and everybody is pumped for the campaign, and we've said so many things about it in the bulletin, and we put up a poster or two about it, and we've tried to rally people on the local effort. We had committees done, and people had been cooking food and preparing for their roles in this campaign, and I stood up before them, and I told them the story of Gideon. It's the only thing I had in the gun. And how God reduced them down to that small, small group. And God helping them put to flight over 120,000 Midianites. And the job wasn't done, even though nighttime came and the guys were tired and everything else. God said, you still gotta work and get it done. And I told that story. And I then said, you know, I'm looking around at a congregation that's just looking so forward to this evangelistic campaign. And do you realize we can do this on our own if we want? And I'm hearing the amens and the, yeah, we can. And I said, that brings me to an announcement I need to make. And so we took a dozen people during the day, and we had people who worked during the day but came at night and knocked doors with us, even though the doors would slam. And we had more people in our church working in some way to try to pull this off than we'd ever had in any project before. Amen. We baptized 9 people. Our little church handled the business, so to speak. Because God was on our side. Well, I could have gone nuts on the phone with the people that told me we can't come. I could have told the church that I had to address that night, that, you know, all is lost and everything else. And I thought, you know, the thing we need to do is figure out a way, if possible, to convince them we can pull this baby off on our own. And that's what patience will do for you. So patience continues to be the need of all of us preachers. But it's especially true of young men. Patience will go a long way. As you step back and instead of rebuke, you realize where somebody is and you say, okay, how can I coax from them what I need from them? You see. Well, let's talk about point 8, and that is pet plans. You know, we all have the things that we like to do the best, or we're more comfortable with, or whatever the case. You know, I spoke a moment ago about campaigns. You know a lot about foreign missions by being here in this school, and many of us as instructors, in fact, all of us as instructors have gone overseas somewhere to teach at one time or another. And so, you know, that becomes a kind of a favorite thing, a thing we really, really look forward to in that regard. Others, you know, think in terms of other little projects and pet plans, as it were, and preachers can develop a penchant for pet plans. And if these plans are not included by the local church with the same insistence, then the preacher might pass by a thriving opportunity. But to me, it seems more consistent to what the New Testament says for a preacher to try to fit into the plans of the local church rather than the local church fitting into the plans of the preacher. And to me, it seems that we tend not to do this kind of thing, and if we try, we don't do it very well. And you need to observe the fact that many churches have certain works going as long as that certain preacher is there with them. But when that certain preacher leaves for whatever reason, then that particular work is dropped because they don't have, as the church, the same buy-in as the preacher himself did. And so you, when you go to a place to preach, you need to find your way to fit in and not bring with you necessarily your little pet plan that you're just so sold on, but nobody else is. This is all about working with people in this regard. And then finally, number 9. All of us need to remember that we're God's man. And we need to major in being God's man. And so this is the point I wish to make, and that is that early in life, a preacher ought to deal with his own ego. All of us have an ego. Some of us have a bigger ego than others of us do. Ego is a big problem and a big challenge for every preacher. Because you'll be the visiting preacher somewhere or on the tryout or whatever, and everybody will just fall all over themselves and tell you how wonderful you are. And you're going to be tempted to believe those press clippings. So get a hold of your ego now while you can. And you're going to have to make the choice whether you are God's man or your own man. And some preachers make the wrong choice in that regard. You need to be willing to go where you might be the most useful. It may not be the place that pays the most. It may not be the place that has the best weather all the time. It may not be the place where everybody constantly adores you. But are you going to be willing to go where you might be the most useful? Or are you only willing to go where you will, at least as you think of it, find it to be the most pleasant? You need to be willing to step through the doors opened by God rather than try to force doors down in order to be a personal success of one kind or another. Be willing to walk in the footsteps of Jesus and don't climb the ladder of brotherhood success. And you will be tempted to do that, as I was several years ago. We've got to learn to be God's man in our own ambitions. We've got to learn to be God's man in our own dreams. But we also need to learn to deal humbly and kindly to other preachers who do not seem to walk this way. I appreciate your good attention and appreciate this opportunity to be able to tell you about these things. You are dismissed.